Hopefully you haven't started eating your little snack pack this morning. But you're probably wondering what that is. It's a little special treat that I thought I'd send you all home with today. That's a tortilla from Walmart, one of the finest ever made, and a little piece of beef jerky. I think that's from Sam's Club. So you can open up your bag for just a moment. I want you to reach here and there and touch that tortilla and touch that little piece of beef jerky. You can even take a taste of it if you'd like. The people who put it in the bag, they wore plastic gloves and all that. It's totally sanitized. And they're fresh too. Take a deep smell of that. Okay, now you want to seal that bag back up after you take a deep sniff, okay? Because this is a little souvenir from today's message. I want you to pretend for a moment, imagine for just a moment, that we're a family, we all live in the same house, and I'm your father. We're just pretending, okay? I know I might not be your choice of a dad, but we're just pretending. So just imagine, all right? And one morning, I come into the kitchen, and I look at all of you, and I say, kids, I got to tell you something. I said, you know, you're probably not going to like this, but for the next 6 months, every single day, all you get to eat is as many flour tortillas as you'd like and some beef jerky. What would you think? There you go. One honest person right there. You've got to be kidding, Dad. What in the world is going on? What is your problem? Now, imagine for a moment that I tell you, well, it's not just going to be 6 months. It's going to be a year. No vegetables. You might say yay to that. No candy. No snacks. No treats. No fruit. Just flour tortillas and beef jerky every day for a year. Now, what would you think? More boo? Boo-hoo-hoo, maybe. Yeah, you get sick? Well, I want you to imagine now that I look you straight in the eye and I tell you this. Kids, ain't going to be a year. It's going to be 40 years of your life that all you get to eat is this flour tortilla, as many as you want every day, and beef jerky. Now what would you think? And what would you feel, and what would you say? Knowing that I really mean it. Knowing that I'm going to keep my word. You might decide to leave the family, don't you think? You might decide, you know what, Dad, tell you what, I'll do this for, let's see, I'm 15 now, 3 years, I'm 18, then I'm out of here. I'm going to let you be my father. That's abusive, Dad. How can you possibly be? Aren't you worried about all the other nutrients that my body needs? Oh, my friends, they don't have to eat flour tortillas every day and beef jerky. What about them? You know the classic line, they're not my kids. You're my kids. Don't worry about what some other family does. You probably heard that growing up. I'd like to read some passages to you from the Bible this morning. What I want to talk with you about today is the single most contagious and deadly disease facing the church today. Not just ours, but any church. The church in America, the church in the world. Single most contagious and deadly disease in the church today. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, I don't want you to forget, dear brothers and sisters, what happened to our ancestors in the wilderness long ago. God guided all of them by sending a cloud that moved along ahead of them, and He brought them all safely through the waters of the sea on dry ground. As followers of Moses, they were all baptized in the cloud and the sea, and all of them ate the same miraculous food, and all of them drank the same miraculous water, for they all drank from the miraculous rock that traveled with them, and that rock was Christ. Yet after all of this, God was not pleased with most of them, and He destroyed them in the wilderness. These events happened as a warning to us, so we would not crave evil things as they did, or worship idols as some of them did. For the Scriptures say, the people celebrated with feasting and drinking, and they indulged themselves in pagan revelry. And we must not engage in sexual immorality as some of them did, causing 23,000 of them to die in one day. Nor should we put Christ to the test as some of them did, and then died from snake bites. And do not grumble and complain as some of them did, for that is why God sent His angel of death to destroy them. All these events happened to them as examples for us. They were written down to warn us who live at the time when this age is drawing to a close. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes, to be honest, we think of ourselves as New Testament believers, and we are. And we can think to ourselves, you know, that Old Testament, that Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 and 2 Samuel, and I could go through the list. All of that, that's back there. That's Old Testament. Don't relate to me. I'm in this marvelous new age, the age of Christ, the age of grace, the age of the New Testament, the age of the epistles, the age of the four Gospels. But all that stuff back there in the Old Testament, that's like Old Testament. Obsolete, doesn't relate to me. And here, right in the middle of the New Testament, Paul has to go and mess it all up. And he says to the Corinthians, he says, guys, listen to me. Dear friends, don't forget the story. Don't forget what happened back there. Don't forget that this was written to warn us who live at the end of the age. In the last dispensation. That's us. In Exodus chapter 16, we're going to pick up this story. The story that Paul is referring to. Then the children of Israel left Elim and journeyed into the Sin Desert between Elim and Mount Sinai. They arrived there a month after leaving Egypt. So, you know, 31 days after they left Egypt. They saw these miraculous things. You all know that. All the plagues. God destroys their enemy. The most powerful nation in the world is Egypt. And God just brings the Egyptians to their very knees. And 2 million people are led out of Egypt. And all the Egyptians are saying, here, take my food, take my money, go. And so the Israelites are leaving with great wealth. And they come to the Red Sea. And oh, they're afraid. And the army's coming behind them. And God opens up the Red Sea. And every single, they see the miraculous water standing on end, just standing there. They walk through on dry ground, not muddy ground, not damp ground, not wet ground, but dry ground. And they see behind them this cloud and fire that separates them from the Egyptian army, Pharaoh and his army, trying to destroy them. And then the last person gets through, and the cloud goes and the fire goes, and Pharaoh comes in, running on the same dry ground, the water still standing. And just as the first guy's about to start to come out of the water, and the last guy's in, bam, the water collapses, and all the Egyptian army, the strongest, mightiest army in the entire world, is destroyed. Right before their eyes. Single greatest miracle in the entire Bible other than the resurrection. But this one, of course, was extended over many, many months as they saw the plagues and all that God did to deliver them. There too, the whole community of Israel spoke bitterly against Moses and Aaron. 31 days after the out of Egypt. 31 days. They are now bitterly complaining about their leaders. Oh, that we were back in Egypt. They moaned. It would have been better if the Lord had killed us there. At least there we had plenty to eat. But now you brought us into the desert to starve us to death. Then the Lord said to Moses, look, I'm going to rain down food from heaven. The people can go out each day and pick up as much food as they need for the day. I will test them in this to see whether they will follow my instructions. Tell them to pick up twice as much as usual on the sixth day of each week. Then Moses and Aaron called a meeting of all the people of Israel and said, in the evening, you realize that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. In the morning, you will see the glorious presence of the Lord. He has heard your complaints, which are against the Lord and not against us. That's interesting. Moses said it that way, isn't it? Because, you know, they were complaining against Moses. Moses said, No. The Lord takes this personal. The Lord will give you. He said, He has heard your complaints, which are against the Lord, not us. The Lord will give you meat to eat in the evening and bread in the morning. For He has heard all your complaints against Him. Yes, your complaints are against the Lord, not against us. And says it three times. Then Moses says to Aaron, say to this entire community of Israel, come into the Lord's presence and hear His reply to your complaints. And as Aaron spoke to the people, they looked towards the desert. Within the guiding cloud, they could see the awesome glory of the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, I have heard the people's complaints. Now tell them, in the evening you will have meat to eat, and in the morning you'll be filled with bread. Then you'll know that I am the Lord your God. That evening, vast number of quail arrived and covered the camp. I was going to try to get smoked quail jerky, but I couldn't find it. The next morning, the desert all around the camp was wet with dew. When the dew disappeared later in the morning, thin flakes, white like frost, covered the ground. This is the closest thing I could get to look like a white flake. The Israelites were puzzled when they saw it. What is it? Then Moses said, it is the food the Lord has given you. The Lord says that each household should gather as much as it needs, pick up 2 quarts for each person. So the people of Israel went out and they gathered the food. And of course, if you know some of the story, some of them left it overnight. They weren't supposed to, and it got maggots the next morning. But that's okay because there was other people who had, you know, and there was fresh manna each morning. So each family had enough, every single one of them. Verse 24, the next morning the leftover food was wholesome and good, without maggots. That's because over the Sabbath, when they weren't supposed to go out the next morning, it lasted an extra day. Miraculously. Moses said, this is your food for today. For today is the Sabbath of the Lord. There'll be no food on the ground today. Gather the food for 6 days, but on the seventh day is the Sabbath. There'll be no food on the ground for you on that day. Some of the people went out anyway. They didn't listen, you know, careful. To gather food, even though it was the Sabbath, but there was none to be found. How long will these people refuse to obey my commands and instructions? The Lord said to Moses. Do they not realize that I have given them the seventh day? The Sabbath is a day of rest. That's why I give you twice as much food on the sixth. So there'll be enough for 2 days. On the Sabbath day, you must stay in your place. Don't pick up the food on the ground on that day. So the people rested on the seventh day. In time, the food became known as manna. It was white like coriander seed, and it tasted like honey cakes. Then Moses gave them this command from the Lord. Take 2 quarts of manna and keep it forever as a treasured memorial in the Lord's provision, of the Lord's provision. By doing this, later generations will be able to see the bread that the Lord provided in the wilderness when He brought you out to Egypt. Moses said to Aaron, get a container and put 2 quarts of manna in it, and store it in the sacred place as a reminder for all future generations. Aaron did this just as the Lord had commanded Moses. He eventually placed it in safekeeping in the Ark of the Covenant. So the people of Israel ate manna for 40 years until they arrived in the land of Canaan where there were crops to eat. 40 years. I'm not making this up. 40 years. The reason this isn't a sealed baggie, because I'm going to have you do something with it later. This is your memorial. The Israelites, I don't know if you know this, but they put these in jars, a couple of them, and they carried them throughout their entire history of Israel for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years. As a reminder of some things that I want to talk about today. And then we go to Numbers chapter 21. We see this story, Numbers 11, continue to unfold. The people soon began to complain to the Lord about their hardships, and when the Lord heard them, His anger blazed against them. Fire from the Lord raged among them and destroyed the outskirts of the camp. The people scattered to Moses, screamed to Moses for help. And when he prayed to the Lord, the fire stopped. After that, the area was known as Teberah, the place of burning. Then the foreign rabble who were traveling with the Israelites began to crave the good things of Egypt. And the people of Israel also began to crave and complain. "Oh, for some meat," they exclaimed. "We remember all the fish we used to eat for free in Egypt." Like, they weren't paying for the manna or the quail either. But your mind gets twisted when critical spirit disease infects your body. And you lose your reasoning abilities. "We had all the cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic that we wanted. And we were beaten and we were killed by the Pharaohs and we were tortured and we were treated worse than cattle." They forgot. All they remembered was the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. "But now our appetites are gone, and day after day after day, we have nothing to eat but this pathetic manna." The manna looked like small coriander seed, pale yellow in color. The people gathered it from the ground and made flour by grinding it with hand mills or pounding it in a mortar. Then they boiled it in a pot and made it into flat cakes. These cakes tasted as though they had been cooked in olive oil. The manna came down from the camp with dew during the night. Moses heard all the family standing in front of their tents weeping. And the Lord became extremely angry. Moses was also very agitated. Moses said to the Lord, "Why are you treating me, your servant, so miserably? What did I do to deserve the burden of a people like this? Are they my children? Am I their father? Is that why you've told me to carry them in my arms like a nurse carries a baby to the land you swore to give their ancestors? Where am I supposed to get meat for all these people? They keep complaining and say, 'Give us meat,' and I can't carry all these people myself. The load is far too heavy. I'd rather you killed me than treat me like this. Please spare me this misery." And now we skip over a few pages to Numbers 21, and we find this. "Then the people of Israel set out from Mount Hor, taking the road to the Red Sea, the land of Eden. 'Why have you brought us to Egypt, out of Egypt, to die here in the wilderness?' they complain. 'There's nothing to eat here and nothing to drink, and we hate this wretched manna.' So the Lord sent poisonous snakes among them, and many of them were bitten and died. Then the people came to Moses and cried, 'We have sinned by speaking against the Lord and against you. Pray the Lord will take away the snakes.' So Moses prayed for the people." And on and on and on the story goes. We get in the middle of this, and we get to Numbers chapter 13. God has told Moses, "I got this great land that I want to give you." And so Moses devised this plan. Moses gave men the instruction to go and explore the land that they were to take. "Go northward to the Negev, the hill country. See what the land is like and find out whether the people living there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? Do their towns have walls? Are they unprotected? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there many trees? Enter the land boldly, with courage, and bring back samples of the crops you see. It happened to be a season for harvesting the first ripe grapes." So they went up and explored the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near Lebo Hamath. Going northward, they passed first through the Negev and arrived at Hebron, where Ahiman, Shimei, and Tamai, all descendants of Anak, lived. The ancient town of Hebron was founded 7 years before the Egyptian city of Zoan. When they came to what is now known as the Valley of Ishkol, they cut down a cluster of grapes so large that it took two of them to carry it on a pole between them. They also took samples of pomegranates and figs. At this time, the Israelites renamed the Valley of Ishkol Cluster because of the cluster of grapes they had cut there. After exploring the land for 40 days, the men returned to Moses and Aaron and the people of Israel at Kadesh in the wilderness of Paran. They reported to the whole community what they had seen and showed them the fruit that they had taken from the land. This was their report to Moses. We arrived in the land you sent us to see, and it is indeed a magnificent country, a land flowing with milk and honey. Here is some of the fruit as proof. But the people living there are powerful, and their cities and towns are fortified and very large. We also saw descendants of Anak who are living there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, and the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites live in the hill country. The Canaanites live there along the coast of the Med Sea and along the Jordan Valley. But Caleb tried to encourage the people as he stood before Moses. Let's go at once to take the land, he said. We can certainly conquer it. But the other men who had explored the land with him answered, we can't go against them. They're stronger than we are. So they spread discouraging, critical reports about the land among the Israelites. The land we explored will swallow us up. All the people there are huge. We even saw giants there, the descendants of the Anak. We felt like grasshoppers next to them, and that's what we looked like to them. Then all the people began weeping aloud, and they cried all night. You know, you see that theme. The Israelites were really good at crying. And we're not just talking a few shed tears. We're talking the entire community. 2 million, historians estimate, weeping in their tents all night long. We wish we had died in Egypt. Their voices rose in a great chorus of complaint. Or even here in the wilderness they wailed, why is the Lord taking us to this country only to have us die in battle? Our wives and our little ones will be carried off as slaves. Let's get out of here and return to Egypt. Had they lost their minds? They were slaves in Egypt for 400 years. They just said, our wives and little ones will be carried off as slaves. And then they say right after that, let's go back to Egypt. Again, critical spirit disease infects your brain and ruins your ability to reason. Then they plotted amongst themselves, let's choose another leader and go back to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell face down on the ground before the people of Israel. Two of the men who had explored the land, Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, tore their clothing, they said to the whole community, the land we explored is a wonderful land. And if the Lord is pleased with us, He will bring us safely to the land and give it to us. It is a rich land flowing with milk and honey. And don't rebel against the Lord and don't be afraid of the people of the land. They're only helpless prey. They have no protection, but the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid. But the whole community began to talk about stoning Joshua and Caleb. Then the glorious presence of the Lord is spread to all the Israelites from above the tabernacle. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? Will they never believe me, even after all the miraculous signs I've done among them? I will disown them and destroy them with a plague. Then I will make you a nation greater and mightier. So Moses intercedes for all the people. He begs the Lord to forgive them. Then the Lord said, I will pardon them as you have requested. But as surely as I live and as surely as the earth is filled with the Lord's glory, not one of these people will ever enter the land. They have seen my glorious presence and the miraculous signs I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness. But again and again and again, they've tested me and complained against me and refused to listen. They will never even see the land I swore to give your ancestors. None of them who have treated me with contempt will enter it. But my servant Caleb is different from the others. He's remained loyal to me. And I will bring him into the land he explored. Now turn around and do not go towards the land where the Amalekites and Canaanites live. Tomorrow you must set out for the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea. Then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, how long will this wicked nation complain about me? I have heard everything these Israelites have been saying. Now tell them this, as surely as I live, I will do to you the very things I heard you say I, the Lord, have spoken. You will all die here in the wilderness because you complained against me. None of you who are 20 years old or older will be counted in the census. You will never enter the land I swore to give. The only exception will be Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. And then he goes on to tell them that for every day that you explored the land, which was 40 days, it will represent a year, 40 years. You will wander in the desert. critical spirit disease spreads to all the Israelites, and they never saw the land because of it, and they lost everything. They lost everything. It is so easy to complain. In America, it is a national pastime. In the Church of Jesus Christ, it is the single most toxic, deadly disease and extremely contagious that we're facing today in America. Because we brought our American culturalism right in, our American sin right into the church, and we grumble and we complain and we whine and we criticize. Another word would be, and we're discontent. George Barna states, he is a famous evangelical Christian who gathers statistics and data among born-again Christians, not nominal Christians, but people who say they've accepted Jesus Christ as their personal Savior. He states in his book, where he's written many, that the church in America is not even keeping up with the death rate as far as growth goes, and that the churches, most of them that are growing by leaps and bounds in America, are simply discontented Christians who have left this church and are looking for the new hot thing on this corner and are now going here. We treat the church a little bit like we treat Menards. I got a project at home that I want to work on. And so I go to Menards and I look around and I take my card and I walk around Menards and I start asking people, hey, where's the wood? Where's the doors at? And that's why they're there. They're there to serve us. They're there to help us. They're getting paid. You know what? I don't really like Menards, actually. I'm going to try Home Depot. So I go over to Home Depot, and we look around, and we find some stuff there. And, yeah, but we don't really like it so much. We think, you know, I'm going to Lowe's. What God intended was for us to walk into Home Depot. I'm speaking figuratively of the church. Pick up an apron, put it on, and start helping. Load the shelves. But instead, what so often we do is put a critical eye on the very thing that God has blessed us with and God has given us. When I travel to Honduras, Bill Saunders' wife, Patty, is from Honduras. She was from the church in Tegucigalpa. When I go to the church of San Pedro Sula over Holy Week, I've been going there for almost 13 years to speak. About 3,000 people gather. A lot of them dress up. They wear dresses. The guys mostly wear khakis and a nice shirt. One time I stood on their stage and spoke, and it was 120 degrees. They meet their church. They're very excited about their church. Their building is a metal roof on the people, and their Sunday school area for all their kids, there's hundreds of them, is a little cinder block brick house. Now, many of these people, you think, well, Mark, you know, yeah, poor people, they're used to that stuff. There's Lexuses in the parking lot. There's a few Mercedes-Benz in the parking lot. There's a lot of Toyotas, just like right in our parking lot, out in that parking lot. See, not all these people come from the hills and live in cardboard shacks. A lot of them are what's known as the Honduran middle class. You go into the bathrooms, and the bathrooms, they try their best to keep them clean, but they become fairly repugnant. And during Holy Week, they have two meetings in the morning, and all the kids, a lot of them sit in the meeting on hard metal chairs under the sun. Well, the metal roof, you know, protects them, and then you put little tent awnings outside, and then they all eat at about noon or one. There's people out over an open fire, and they cook rice and chicken, and all the people line up, and they go through this line, almost all 2,000 to 3,000 of them. Then they spend the afternoon, some of them just hanging out there playing soccer, and then we have meetings again in the evening, and we do that for 3.5 days. The church in San Pedro Sula meets there all the time. They don't have air conditioning. They don't have pads under their bottoms. And those of you who have ever been to Honduras, I'll tell you right now, you'd be hard-pressed to ever find a more joyous people. They smile. They sing their hearts out. Sweat's dripping down their face. There's a few wet shirts around you. Everybody just singing to God. Meetings usually last about an hour and a half. Then there's a little break and they go to the stand. You have a little pop stand back there and little treats. And they stand around eating treats. And then they meet it for another hour and a half. And then they have lunch. And some people lay down to take a nap on mattresses on the ground. I wonder for a moment, folks, just imagine for a moment if... Guys, I want you to think about this for a moment, you married guys. That every day you went home, you just compared your wife to the neighbor's wife. Now, you know, how come you don't have a body like that? And, you know, she's really sweet. I really like her personality. And she's got a great temperament. Man, does she keep that house? It's stunning. What do you do with all your time? Or wives to our husbands. Man, Tom over there, he's so good to his wife. She's not driving no used 94 Toyota Camry. She's got the brand new SUV for those two kids. It's a lot safer. She loves him a lot more. I think you understand where I'm going with this. It could go on and on, and it does go on and on. And in fact, do you know what props up the entire U.S. economy? I'm going to put it in words you've never heard before. I want you to go think about it. If you differ with me, that's okay. Go ahead and write me if you think this is wrong, but I'd like you to think about it. It's the fact that Americans become so discontent so easily that they always have to have the newest, latest, greatest, and they spend. Consumer debt is what keeps the American economy afloat. And we buy more, and we buy more, and we buy more. I have a few friends come over to my house and go, Mark, why do you have rabbit ears on your TV? I said, well, there's a couple reasons. Number one, look on the roofs in the neighborhood. You see an antenna on anybody's roof? It's either against code to do it or nobody does it, and the only way you can get reception is cable. I'm not going to buy cable. All I need is another temptation in my house to keep me in front of the TV. I like TV. Don't get me wrong, I like TV. And don't get me wrong, I'm not talking against you if you have cable. That's up to you and God, your decision with you and God. But I'm trying to explain to this person. And why are you watching on a 19-inch television that's 10 and a half years old? Why don't you have a plasma TV, at least an HD? Because I don't need one. I don't need one. I mean, this one does what I need it to do. But in America, that's just not the way we live, is it? It's got to always be new. We've brought that right into the church. Right into the church. And in America, there are millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars being spent to keep the Christians happy and satisfied that their kids have the best possible child care and the newest possible stuff in all the Sunday school rooms, or we'll lose them. And I have to tell you, I wonder what God thinks when He looks down on America. I have to tell you that I believe that we have all that we need. I've been following Christ for 30 years. And when I make this statement, I want to be very clear. I'm not looking down my nose at another Christian. They decide to have a building. That's awesome. Go for it. They're reaching people. It's awesome. Go for it. I'm talking about an attitude. What I'm really getting at is an attitude. How a person decides to go about church, different groups of people, is between them and Jesus Christ. But I'm talking about an attitude that has become pervasive today in the church. I've been involved in church for 30 years of my life, passionately following the Lord. Before that, it was 15 that I remember. I've raised two children that are now married. My children never went to a church that had a Sunday school room with an official door on it. And my children love Christ. They love Christ. They're excited about Christ. They went in little classrooms like we have downstairs in the basement. The bands that we get to listen to every week are better than any of the bands I had the first 9 years of me following Christ. They're better. The sound systems are better. The seats that we have here today are more comfortable than all the seats at Oak Grove. They're hard orange plastic. It's easy, isn't it, for us to criticize instead of realizing that if I just get involved and start making contributions, I can make the church the place that God wanted it to be. Each and every one of us has things that we bring to the table that we can offer, but it's often easier, is it not, to grumble about the manna that God has given us. Just like it's easy to grumble about the lot in life that God has given us. Just like it's easy to grumble and complain about the job that God has given us. Just like it's easy to grumble and complain about the spouse that God has or has not given us. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 14, Paul writes, from jail, do all things without grumbling or complaining or criticizing. And he goes on to say that as you do this, in everything you do, stay away from complaining and criticizing and arguing so no one can speak a word of blame against you. Live such a clean, pure life. Live as children of God in this dark world full of crooked and perverted people. Let your lives shine brightly before them. Our lives only shine brightly if the dust and the spirit of complaint is not dwelling in us. The last verse I'd like to share with you in closing is found in the book of Deuteronomy. And I believe this verse explains an awful lot of things about life that God sometimes takes us through. I remember this verse especially being pressed on my heart when my wife and I and our three children were living in a trailer. It cost me $70 a month in lot rent. It had approximately 580 square feet. None of the windows would open. It'd get about 105 degrees in the summer. You'd kind of bake. The furnace would shut off by itself in the winter, and I'd have to take about an hour to push in a little button that felt like it was going to break my finger off to try to keep lighting it. And when the flame would light, then you let it off the button and it'd poof out. And sometimes it'd be at 4 in the morning. And I had it checked out and no one could fix it. I often reflected on this passage in Deuteronomy. Be careful, Mark, to obey all the commands I'm giving you today. Then you will live and multiply and you will enter and occupy the land the Lord swore to your ancestors. Remember how the Lord your God led you through the wilderness for 40 years. Humbling you and testing you to prove your character and to find out what was in your heart, whether you would really obey him or not. Yes, he humbled you by letting you go hungry and then feeding you with manna. Some of you know that over the last year, a number of people have left the Urban Refuge. I understand many of the reasons. Many of them, I talked to them personally, and I want you to know I have no ill will towards them at all. None whatsoever. I think God's working on us that remain. I think the Lord our God is humbling us and testing us to see what's in our heart. To see if the joy in our life is because the auditorium's full, or if the joy in our life is because I get to be with whoever shows up worshiping Jesus Christ. Never forget that the key to success in life or church is humility. For it is on the humble that God grants extra grace. I would rather be in a place where God has me in the process of growing humility, that greater grace might be given, than in a place that would appear to be doing very well, but was full of grumbling and complaining. I'd like you to take this tortilla and this jerky. You don't have to do this if you don't want to. I'd like you to, you can either put it in a jar that seals it, or you can put it in another baggie that's better. And I'd like you to put it in a place where you can see it for a while. maybe your dresser, maybe on your wall at work, and people are going to ask you what that's for. And here's what you're going to tell them. You're going to tell them, you know what that's for? I got that at church. It's to remind me to be grateful. It's to remind me of how good I really have it. It's to remind me of how good God has been to me. Because you see, friends, even if God were to come and tell you and I that we're going to have to eat this tortilla and this piece of jerky every day for the next 40 years, He'd still be being good to us. And He still would expect us not to complain about it. Even if God says to us, you guys, you're going to meet in this little building here, and you're going to keep trying to reach out, and over the years there'll be a trickle and a trickle of people that might come to Christ, but that's what you're going to do for me for the next 40 years of your life. You know what I say? I say, Lord, thank you for the privilege of following Christ, of laboring with other men and women who are here because they love the Lord. They're here because they want to make a difference in the lives of others. And we will take from Christ whatever His hand determines to give us. Let's pray. Father, I want to thank You today for Your generosity towards us, Lord. Even this facility You give us, the tremendous relationship that we have with the school. The fact that we can store all of our stuff downstairs in this school. The fact that we have an elevator to bring it up every week rather than have to carry it up the stairs. Lord, I know me personally. I need to grow in this area of my life. It's easy for me when I'm driving down the highway to wish all these other cars weren't around me and the highway was just mine. It's easy for me, Lord, to become discontent, just like any other human being. But I pray, Heavenly Father, if You could do one thing, just one thing in this church, that You would develop a spirit that is like Caleb and Joshua. Hey guys, let's pull together. We can do this. We can have an impact on this city for Jesus Christ through our joy, through our love, through the light of God shining through us. I pray, Lord, that we would not be the type of person who spread a discouraging report or who focus on the negative, but rather focus on the positive. That we would count our blessings and not our potholes. Help us, Lord. Help me to remember the manna. In Jesus' name.